Metaxas on Eric Metaxas. Let's talk about it with Eric Metaxas on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And we are so glad you're here. You always have a place at our table. And I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Matthew Porter, our executive producer, is here. Matthew is a screenwriter. He's raising his kids to be screenwriters. How do you do that, Matthew?
Well, you instill a love of story, and then you withhold your affirmation and affection. It just trains them to want to.
That works.
It works.
Oh, screen, not scream, right? Yeah.
Our producer, Jinx, is working hard in his little glass booth. At Jinx's house, everybody hunts Easter eggs with rifles.
That is correct. We use BB guns inside, though, for safety.
Our video director, John Myers, is here. Believe it or not, this is the year anniversary of doing this show remotely. So, all kidding aside, John, thanks for making that happen for us. Through every week, and you're amazing. Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. George once thought he had a book in him. Turned out it was acid reflux. Kathy Wyatt is the soft feminine side of the program. Kathy, did I hear correctly? Your church had its Easter sunrise service in a cemetery?
You did. Yes, we did.
Like it.
She's become a Lutheran.
Yep.
Strange bunch.
Was a Presbyterian missionary to Lutherans, but she's jumped in that pool whole hog. And she has a sign on her car. She's recruiting. They give her 10% of everybody she brings to the church, and it's growing.
Just say something nice and about how appropriate it is to have a Easter sunrise service in a cemetery. What
you
better
know
place?
Something, Kathy,
and then
it's really appropriate to have a sunrise service.
There you go. Okay.
In a cemetery.
What's the great answer?
Texas, by the way, is a number one New York Times bestselling author. His writing has appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and he's not proud of that. The New Yorker, less proud of that. He also hosts the Eric Metaxas radio show, a daily syndicated radio show, and is a senior fellow and lecturer at large at the King's College in Manhattan. Eric's latest book, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. Eric, I haven't finished the book, but I started it, and I went to the last chapter to find out what the dream was. I do that in columns, too. I read the first paragraph and the last paragraph. And then you know what it's about and whether you want to spend the in-between time. And just so you know, I'm going to be spending a lot of time with you. I love the dream and I love the story and I love your background. Years ago, I discovered Dalimore's 2-volume biography of Whitfield. He was a Baptist pastor in Canada who gave his whole life in the study of that one person. The first volume ended at he was 27 or 28. And the second volume followed it. I feel sort of like there's another volume here and that you should be working on it. You did a lot of living in the early years. if you had done the whole thing, because you're old now. I mean, it would have taken four or five volumes. Eric, do you feel kind of uncomfortable spending this many pages talking about yourself?
No, I don't. What's your next question? It's a funny thing, Steve. First of all, it's always fun to talk to you. Thank you for being fun to talk to. This book, as you will see when you read the middle of it, there's a lot of just insane comedy, true stories that are so crazy and funny that if you just tell them the way they happened, people will be entertained. And I thought, I've been telling these stories my whole life, just crazy stuff from growing up. My dad came from Greece. My mom came from Germany. So I grew up in this bizarre household. You know, they're European immigrants, but they're not from the same country. One's from Greece, one's from Germany. It creates a lot of friction and dissonance. And if you want to know why I'm messed up, there you have it. You can read about it. It really is kind of, a lot of it is so crazy. I thought I've got to tell these stories, and some of them are really nuts. And I wanted to write a book that you could give to anybody, not somebody who's on the same page as we are theologically, not even somebody who's searching, somebody that says, I don't know what I think about anything. This is the book for them. Because I said, there are a lot of books that if you give it to somebody, they're going to say, you know, this is not for me. I don't get into this Christian stuff, or I don't know what I'm interested in. I think those of us who are Christians have to be able to share our faith sometimes in ways that are more subtle, more oblique. So I don't get into the faith stuff really until the very end of the book. And by then, hopefully the person will be convinced that I'm not somebody that spent my life looking for God. God found me. I was just living my life, which is what I think most people do.
By the way, a lot of people who are watching or listening right now maybe don't know that Eric could be a stand-up comic. He's one of the funniest guys that I know, and you're going to love this book. I mean, you're going to love the stories. He'll whack you upside the head with some meaning, but you'll do it laughing the whole time. I mean, it's a funny book.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot from people, and I thought that's the greatest compliment that somebody could give me, because I'm not making this up. I've gotten a lot of comments from people saying that they were crying laughing and that they were embarrassed wherever they were reading it because people were looking at them. And I thought to myself, that's the greatest compliment, because I said, I don't want to write a book, you know, about meaning. I want to write a book that's fun. So it's a spiritual memoir. And why does it end at age 25? Because that is when God dramatically, miraculously revealed himself to me. I didn't make it up. It happened to me, and it changed everything literally overnight. Jesus came into my life in a way that I never really dreamt that anything like that could happen, and it happened. But everything leading up to that helps you make sense of the dream that ends the book. If I just kind of give you the dream, it sort of feels like it needs context. So I thought, let me tell the story of my life so that you'll understand what brought me to that moment. But the fact that a lot of it is funny, I thought, why shouldn't it be? This stuff is real. And of course, I'm making fun of myself, because you think when we're young, you can only say this when you're older, but when you're young, you're an idiot. You do things, your naivete puts you in situations that today you would never get in that situation. But back then you're just sort of, you know, you're nice and you don't want to hurt people's feelings. And you just sort of find yourself in these monstrous situations. There's several of those in the book. Now I can look back at it and laugh because nothing horrible happened. But maybe people don't say this enough, Steve, but it's good to be older, isn't it? Learn things.
You're not nearly as old as I am.
Well, who is?
Nobody is. Not fair. I mean, for finals. And you still have a long ways to go.
Well, I'd like to think I have a long way to go. But I really mean it when I say that. I'm amazed. We all say we want to be young, and I get that. But there are things that you just look back and you think, wow.
That's true. It really is.
What's wrong with me? What the heck was in my head at that time? But, I put it in the book so other people can learn from my mistakes.
You know, Dan Allender wrote a book on how God speaks to us in our biographies. I suspect, and you weren't aware of it at the time, But as you wrote this, I suspect you heard the voice of God sometimes, didn't you?
You mean as I wrote the book, looking back?
As you wrote your biography. Dan urges people to write a biography and to listen for the voice of God.
Well, there is no question that remembering intensely is not something most people do. But when you're writing a book about your past and these stories, you're forced to think for a long time about things that normally they glance through your mind and you move on. But that is an amazing experience. It's kind of a meditative experience. And yes, there's no question that I could see God's hand in my life in ways that I didn't at the time. That's putting it mildly.
Yeah. And by the way, before we finish this program, we're going to hear about the dream, but not yet, because we got to, as he did in the book, create a bit of context on that. If anybody asks you what you're listening to, turn your nose up in the air. Let the peacock feathers fly in the breeze and say, I'm listening to Brown, etc. And you're not. We're going to take a break because this is really hard work. Going to take a nap, have some cookies and milk, and then we're going to return. The book, and you got to get this book. It is really a fun read. Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. Don't go anywhere. Just like Jesus, after being gone for a little while, we shall return.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, we're so glad that you're with us, and you're going to be so glad you were, because we're talking with author and speaker Eric Metaxas. And his latest book is a memoir, and you think, I'm not reading that. I'm just, that's like watching paint dry. No, it's not. This book is so good. It's called Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life.
Eric, writers are by nature kind of reflective and, pondering human experience and everything, but only recently for me, and I'm mid 40s, have I looked at my parents and realized that's where I get that, or that's where I get that. I mean, I've thought about what makes me who I am for a long time, but that's a really recent thing. I'm curious to know, with your dad from Greece, your mom from Germany, very different cultures, same continent, but what did you get from each of them? What aspects of them have colored
who you are? I'll tell you, this is counterintuitive, and all of this is in the book. I don't think I left any thought unpublished. I thought, let me just say it all here. But honestly, my mother, as I said, is from Germany. She grew up in Germany. She lost her father in the war. I dedicate my Bonhoeffer book to him. So there's this whole German side. She comes over to the United States in the mid 50s. My dad grows up in Greece, goes through the war, incredible hair. There's a lot about my family's right in the beginning. Chapter 1 is when I'm born. the previous chapter, which is my family's stories, my mother's story and my father's story, I call that chapter zero because it's before chapter one and I didn't know what else to call it. But in chapter zero, I talk about all of this crazy, crazy stuff. And what amazes me, and this comes out in a few places in the book, when I go back and visit Germany, when I go back and visit Greece to kind of reconnect with my people who are there now. You know, I visit them and it's very much part of my life today. It's not some distant past thing. But, you know, when my parents came to this country and met in an English class, you don't put Greeks and Germans together. But the one thing that is unmistakable is that my humor comes mostly from the German side. That, you know, you would think
that is counterintuitive.
That no, Germans, they don't crack jokes. Well, my mom and her family come from what became East Germany, and it is, you know, Saxony, Thuringia. That's where Luther was from. And I wrote a biography about Luther and the kind of barnyard japery, the kind of constant coarse joking and approach to life. Clearly, that's what my family had in Germany. They still have it. When I went there in 71 and when I went there later to visit them, that kind of raucous joking is a mainstay of all my German relatives. And my grandmother was hilarious. I write about her, of course, in the book, and there's even pictures of her. But she was hilarious. Who can say that your grandmother was hilarious? But she was constantly kind of mugging, making faces, cracking jokes. I mean, she was just the life of the party, even when there was no party. And I got to say that is amazing to me when you start putting all this stuff together and it becomes really clear. You know, it doesn't mean that the Greeks have no sense of humor, because they do. But it is so strange when you see these things. And as I said earlier, there was a lot of, it's like meditating on parts of your life and thinking back to this and thinking back to that. And it is bizarre. I mean, I have to say, most people don't do it. But when you have to write a book, you've got to get it right and you've got to get the details and stuff. So I spent all this time thinking about these crazy, crazy things. And there's something really beautiful, let's be honest, about this idea. God invented this idea, right? That two people come together and they create other people. And each kid has different parts of each parent. And some kid is, you know, he's just like his mother and she's just like her father, and that you get all this mixture. And I, you know, for me, the sense of humor is at the core of the whole thing, but that definitely comes from my German side. There's just no way around it.
That's a surprise. Kathy.
Eric, I'm curious, in the process of writing the book, and I'm not a writer, so I have absolutely no idea the process that anybody goes through. Did you sit down and say, okay, I'm going to cover from this period of time to this period of time, and in this length of time, I'm going to talk about this person and this person and this person, this event, et cetera? Or did you just start getting into writing, and then as you were doing it, all of a sudden you found yourself remembering events that had happened that you had forgotten about, or individuals that appeared in a story that you had forgotten about? The reason I'm asking
that is because you make it sound so magical, and it's nothing like that.
Okay. That's what I wanted to
know. First of all, most writers do this, but for the non-writers, I'll just say that, To get in touch with your own mortality, usually I sleep a couple of nights in a coffin. I don't know if that's just, did you know that writers did that? All right, maybe I didn't do that. But I guess when I write, every book is different. So I can't even talk about books, because every book is so different. Somebody who writes the same kind of book, a novel or a mystery novel or a biography, whatever, you know, you begin to develop patterns. Every book I write is wildly different, usually, from the other ones that I've done. Writing the story of your own life, it's bizarre. You'll never do it again. Let's face it. You do it one time. And so that gives it a definitive quality that is a little daunting. You thought, I want to get this right. And so for me, though, I've told a story so many times, and that as an innate storyteller, I didn't really think twice. I just kind of knew I've got to tell this and tell this. The only thing is, what do you leave out? And I did have to cut out a lot of stuff because it was getting long. But I thought, I just like to tell funny stories, and or let me put it this way. I remember the funny stories. But for me, it was just go from A to Z. I knew that Z was going to be the culmination of the book, that it was going to end with my Jesus dream around my 25th birthday. That's all I knew, you know, start at the beginning and end here. Normally, when I write a biography, start at the beginning and end with the person's death. In this case, I didn't want to go that far. My publisher didn't want to publish 1,200 pages. So I thought I'm going to stop at age 25. And really, it is only a matter of telling the stories up to that that I think are relevant. I mean, I didn't put in every single memory. I put in the memories that I thought would lend some to the story that were entertaining, that would reveal something. But I'm very much, you know, from your gut. So yeah, I'm not particularly thoughtful. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
No, not at all.
I wonder, and we don't have time for you to answer it, if you had to go back and apologize to some people that might be offended by.
Can I answer in the next segment?
Of course. That's all we've got is the next segment, because we have reached the end of this segment. And we have to pay for this program. Get this book. You'll rise up and call me blessed for telling you about it. It's really a fun book. And it's Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life by Eric Metaxas. And if anybody asks you what you're listening to, you tell them Steve Brown, etc. By the way, when you're Amazon ordering Eric's book, you can help Key Life at the same time. Check keylife.org/AmazonSmile to learn how. Get 3 free sins if you do.
From Key Life comes 2 mini books. What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These 2 Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
For joining us on Steve Brown, etc. By the way, as I said, when you're on Amazon getting Eric's book, and you can help Key Life. Make sure you check out the keylife.org/AmazonSmile, and you can learn how. And Eric Metaxas, as I've mentioned, is our guest, and his book, and a really fun book. I've loved all of Eric's books, and I'm not finished with this one, but I can hardly wait to get back to it. It's called Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. And you can offer it to your friends as a gift, and they won't know that it's an evangelistic effort until they get to the last chapter, and by then it'll be too late.
Exactly. That was
my
secret plan.
They might even have a dream of a fish. You never
know.
That's
exactly right. That's right. That really was my plan. I said, I want a book that people can read it. Don't tell them what it's about. It's not a Jesus book. It's not a Christian book. It's a book. It's a fun read with a lot of weird, crazy stuff in it. It's about, you know, growing up in a working class immigrant community. I grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church, and it's a lot of bizarre, crazy, funny stories. But then I go to Yale University, and that was like a 2x4 in the head, because here I am, a working class kid, suddenly put in this woke environment. This was the 80s. It was already like, you know, politically correct, Marxist madness creeping in. And I didn't, you know, I didn't know what that was. And so there's a lot, there's just a lot of crazy stuff that I think will be entertaining and interesting. But at the end of it, I tell people what happened to me. And as you say, by then, I hope it's too late. By then they've been sucked in and they're going to think, what? Maybe this Jesus thing could be real. I don't want to believe it, but now I'm stuck. I read the book.
Yeah. Eric, I mean, a lot of your stories remind me of that movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. You know, just kind of that weird, funny, quirky kind of adaptation to a new culture and so forth.
You reduced me to a cartoon is what you're saying. Thank you very much. How dare you? Now, honestly, it is. I just thought there's so many different cultures that you know about. We all know about the Italian-American culture. We've seen a billion movies. We've seen the Jewish-American life. The Greek life, the Greek-American stuff, you don't hear about it very much. And Big Fat Greek Wedding is kind of the cartoon version of it. I really know that my stories are, you know, they're the first experience some people will have with that community and seeing kind of what it's about. And I, you know, there are a lot of crazy characters. You know, I'm not making that up. If you read the book, there are characters in there. You're going to think I made them up. I promise there's not a syllable of exaggeration in the book. It is all 100% exactly what happened. I promise that that's true. And, you know, you it'll be hard to believe, but I'm telling you right now, it is absolutely true. I don't like when people, you know, try to make the story better by tweaking it a little bit. I just thought this is exactly what happened.
Well, and you know, we're often referred to as a nation of immigrants. Probably most of us, at least from, you know, I mean, it may be getting more common now, but most of us are a little bit distant from that immigrant connection. You were, you know, right there. I mean, second generation or first generation.
I'm still
basically
right there. All I have to do is pick up the phone and talk to my parents. And, you know, they've got their accents and their whole different worldview. And that was part of the joy of the book is I called them up a lot to ask them about certain details. Did I get this right? What about this? But yes, that is still very much a part of who I am. And it really explains a lot of where I have my worldview, why I love America, why I hate communism and Marxism, because my parents experienced the horrors of it. It's not an idea. It's something that is real. It's true. And I know how bad it can get. And as it comes into this country, I want to be one of those people sounding the warning. You don't know how bad this can be. So, but yeah, that's still, you know, I grew up with that. Hmm.
Do you, I ask you a question on the other side of the break and I forgot what it was. Do you remember? And I was going to ask you, you said, can I comment on the other side of the break?
Apologies.
Oh, did I have to apologize to people that
it's
I wrote about
humility.
In the book?
What's your excuse?
I no, you said something about the did I have to apologize to people for writing stuff in the book? Can you think of anything? I can't think of anything. Like
no,
what
do you mean? I did. Well, I'm not into it yet, but I would if I were writing about my family, I would have to go back and meet numbers of them and say, I know what I said, but I love you and deal with it kind of.
No, I don't think I mean, I write with tremendous affection for the people in this book, even the ones that are, you know, in some cases, some real wicked characters. But I loved them. And I hope that that comes through in the writing. I love these people because we're all messed up. And if you don't know that, you're an idiot. I think that we're messed up. And I'm telling some stories. I mean, when I was I had insane jobs in the summers during college. And some of those characters, one of them was a Hitler loving Nazi from Hungary. And he was one of the most insane, funny, crazy characters. And, you know, I put it in the book. I wish I could see him today, but I think he's back in Hungary.
Listen, on the other side of the break, we're going to get into some of these stories, and eventually we're going to talk about the dream that changed everything. We appreciate you being with us. You always have a seat at our table, and we've got room for others if you ask them to come along. The name of the book is Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. And the author, of course, is Eric Metaxas. We're going to back out, rest up, come back. Got to pay for this thing. And then we're going to return just like Jesus. He was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. We're hanging out with Eric Metaxas, and we're talking about Eric Metaxas because he's written an autobiography, Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. You can find out more if you're not familiar with Eric. That's because you're living on Mars. You can go to ericmetaxas.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Eric Metaxas.
Eric, I hate to say this, but if you don't go to ericmetaxas.com, you're a racist. Please continue.
I'm just
telling like it is.
Yeah.
Truth teller. You're telling your truth. So you talked about a lot about the whole book is kind of a collection of favorite stories. I wonder if there's any that kind of stand out among the others, particularly any that kind of speak to the kind of the themes of the book.
Well, you got to understand, my father, I would call him up and I'd ask him questions. He says, "You're not telling that story, are you?" Like, he's worried about his reputation. He's going to be 94 in June, and he's really worried about his reputation in the community. If some bad stuff gets out, you know, he could lose a lot of business. I don't know what he's thinking. But I said to him, "Dad, this book is like, you're the hero of this book. I mean, I didn't write it that way. I just told the story, but you end up being the hero, you know?" And that's his picture on the cover. My mother took the picture. They were on a date at the Statue of Liberty in 1958, and she took the picture, and the publicist said, "You got to use this on the cover. It's so great." So that's my dad. But to me, the stories that are the most endearing are just things, immigrant stuff. Like, he didn't get stuff because he grew up during the war and, you know, they didn't have food. And so here he is trying to raise two kids in America and not knowing exactly how that's done sometimes. And so one day we were in Queens, because I grew up before we moved to Connecticut, I was in Queens, New York, and we went to some park we'd be kicking the soccer ball around because my father didn't know anything about baseball or football. So we just have a ball and we kind of kick it around and we were exhausted. It was the middle of the summer and the ice cream truck comes, you know, ding, 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 ding. And my brother and I just went nuts. We were like 5, 6 years old. We want ice cream. But we had no money. So it was a big deal if he's going to give me the money to, you know, get an ice cream cone or something like that. And my father looks at us, you know, and says, "Oh, no. We don't need to do that." "I have V8 in the back of the car." And even at age 5 or 6, you're thinking, "Dad, you have V8 in the back of the car? We wanted ice cream. We're young kids. We want a stinking ice cream. Could we have a dime?" "No, I have V8 in the back of the car." And he literally didn't understand why we wouldn't be thrilled. V8, it's a refreshing, wonderful drink, right? No, especially it's like Maggi tomato warm juice. And it's been in the back of the Valiant for like 3 hours. And it's going to be like 100-degree vegetable juice. So, but like, there's a million stories like that. When we went, one time we went to McDonald's, I was maybe 11 or 12. My father never went, you know, to fast food. My mother would take us. So my brother and I go up, we order. And then my father, he looks at the menu and he says, "This is McDonald's." He says, "Give me one Whopper." And my brother and I just like collapsed to the floor in embarrassment and horror. You don't know what's worse, that he pronounced Whopper Whooper. That we're in McDonald's where they don't sell Whoppers. That's across the street at Burger King. So like every time you turned around, there was kind of, as a kid, your world has ended. And now looking back on it, it's just so funny to me that just these basic stories, and everybody has stories like this on their parents, but with us, it was magnified because of this, you know, strange. My parents were thrilled, you know, to be in a free country where you can work and buy a house and raise your kids and send one of them to Yale, even though we got nothing out of it. Thank God. It's just kind of a lot of it, I think, really is heartwarming in the best sense. I mean, some of it's more than heartwarming, but it's and there are a lot of dark stories. I mean, you know, later on in life, I was involved in an abortion. I write about that because I think it's important for us to come clean on this. This is my life. This is my life doing the best I can, not knowing what I now know. I didn't know Jesus. I was just trying to figure out what's the meaning of life and doing the best I can. You look around for guidance to your friends and stuff. And so, yeah, God had to kind of punch a hole in the sheetrock and to say, hey, I'm out here, because I was just living in a world where I just didn't think anybody could really know God.
Eric, you, when your beloved uncle was dying, your Christian friend offered to pray for him.
Right.
He died anyway.
Yeah.
And
I've hated God ever since. I've hated God ever since. I want nothing to do with you, Christian.
Well, you know, you would think that'd cause you to run rather than being drawn.
Yeah.
I wish you'd tell that story and then lead up to the dream and the Jesus part.
Well, basically, I didn't know what I believed. And I think most people are there. They don't know what they believe. And they're just looking around and there's so many confusing, contradictory things and so many questions. So my uncle went into a coma. And I remember my friend Ed Tuttle, he's the guy really that led me to faith. He says, hey, why don't we, you know, pray for your uncle? And I was so moved by that. And I thought, these people, they don't believe in some God energy. They believe in a real God, the God of the Bible, who you pray to him. He can hear your prayers and he can answer your prayers. And the reality of that moved me. The fact that my uncle passed away, it didn't change the fact that somehow I intuited God is real. This is not just, you know, so something was going on with me around that point. And one night I had a dream. I won't tell it because it's kind of complicated. But the reason I wrote the story of my life from, you know, age zero to 25 is because the dream is a stunning combination of a number of things from my life, a kind of creative weaving that is so creative and brilliant. I knew in the dream, this is God. This is not normal. This was just a staggering confection kind of delivered up to me in this dream of my own life made sense of by the God who I didn't know existed. And it so stunned me in the dream. You know, the punchline is sort of that Jesus ends up being the fish out of water. I won't tell that story. But when you, in the dream, I knew without a question, God is real. Jesus is God. Game over. Whatever I thought I was looking for, whatever I thought you couldn't find, suddenly found me. And I had no doubt. It's kind of like you can't really, there's nothing to say. You know, this is true. God showed himself to me. And it was surprising. It wasn't like I really didn't even believe that you could know. I thought maybe God exists, maybe it's true, but we can't really know. Well, in the dream, God showed me, yes, you can know. And so I've known ever since. But it was literally a day and night. You know, I always say it's like going to sleep single and waking up married. My life was totally changed. And, you know, here we are.
You really believe this stuff, don't you?
I'm afraid I do.
Yeah, Jesus has messed up all of our lives to one degree or another. Eric, we're out of time. And I don't know where it went. Every time you're on with us, it's like this. You keep writing your books and we'll keep talking with you. Thanks for taking time from a busy schedule to be with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the book. It's all true.
I will. I promise. Well, guys, we're going to come back, but only for a short time. We'll tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. Meanwhile, you get this book. You'll like it. Fish Out of Water. A Search for the Meaning of Life. Give it to everybody you know.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
That was a great hour with Eric Metaxas. He's really one of my favorite people. You know, when you look at his background and where he's been and what he's done, you can't believe the convictions that he holds and where he speaks it. He gets invited to a lot of places where if he were a little bit more political, he'd keep his mouth shut, but he doesn't. He doesn't about his political views or his religious views, his Christian views. I saw him on a television program and they talked about some of the bad things going on in our country. And I thought, you know, Eric could talk sociologically. He's certainly educated and can, but he didn't. He said, I don't want to sound weird on this, but there's something going on in our country that is just evil. Evil like in Satan. And I thought at the time, you go, Eric. And he does that all the time on his radio program and in his books, and we've had him on this program a number of times, and each time it's been a great program. Articulate, bright, funny. One of the unusual gifts that God has given the body of Christ in our country. Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
Well, you're going to owe me big time because I got you two really good ones 2 weeks in a row, so you can't be grumpy. This week, Eric Metaxas, and next week, Oz Guinness. He's got a new book coming out next month called, it's a long title, The Magna Carta of Humanity, Sinai's Revolutionary Faith and Future of Freedom.
We like him. He talks funny, but we like him a lot.
We do.
He's going to be fun. We keep bringing up the Guinness ale thing.
Yeah, I think we can put that to rest.
Yeah, he says it's not that side of the family, but I think he's lying through his teeth. He just doesn't want to make a contribution to Key Life, either of beer or money.
He's written enough books, he doesn't need to be related to the beer
That's
people.
Right. Every time he burps, they publish it. And it'll be fun to have him on. I guess he means by that the Ten Commandments, kind of like stuff.
I don't know. I'm reading you the title. Fresh, fresh off of Amazon. Yep, it is. It is. Yeah, it's a long book.
Okay, well, we'll next. You're going to have to join us next week to find out what it is. You're going to have to read Eric's book to find out about the dream. He's selling books and didn't want me to tell the whole story. Smart man, that Eric Metaxas. Hey, you'll be smart if you join us next week, same time, same place. And between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that gives you a wide, wide berth.